You sound pretty good to me, man. You sound pretty good to me.
This is the Citadel Cafe.
This is the Citadel Cafe, episode number 63, recorded live Wednesday, April 24th, 2013. I am Joel Duggan, and to my right is Mr. Peyton Francis of Cardboard Treehouse. Peyton, how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing very well, sir. Very well.
Good, good, good. I also am very well and very full. Once again, Jocelyn made dinner, so I am quite content. I'm happy when my tummy is happy. It's just, just kind of how it rolls. Joining us this week, returning from long, long ago, I believe episode 12 maybe was the last time that he was on, is Mr. Matt Forcom from RobotBeach.com, RobotPirates.com, I'm detecting a theme, and GeeksOfSteel.com. Welcome, sir.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going great. You've got quite a list of stuff to your name now.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I mean, the Robot Beach thing is over now, unfortunately. And then I'm moving on to Robot Pirates.
Okay, cool. So, I mean, I have to confess, I did always read Robot Beach, but I'm now behind on the new Robot Pirates venture. So I guess fill our listeners in. What's that all about?
Well, I'm behind on it, too. It's essentially... It's essentially what it's going to be is it's going to be a series of animated shorts that can that'll kind of come together and make one longer story, if you will.
Nice.
Yeah, I took Robot Beach about as far as I thought I could take that strip, and I kind of started missing animation, and so I wanted to start over fresh with a lot of what I've learned just from working on the strip. And get back to my roots, which is animation, and do something there. So I've got a website set up. Don't really have a whole lot on it yet.
You have a very cool logo that spins around upside down and reveals a top secret thing, which I think is amazing.
Yeah, yeah. There's a little hints at stuff that might be coming up in the animation. But I plan on doing, you know, live work sessions and tutorials and all sorts of crazy cool things. And I figure if I can spend as much time on the animation as I did with the strip, you know, a couple hours a night for most of the nights of the week, then I can probably churn out a pretty good chunk of animation and in a relatively acceptable amount of time.
Nice.
So that's current slash future plans. I don't really have a lot going with that right now, but it is out there.
Very, very cool. Peyton, what have you been up to this week?
Just work, putting in fires, all that fun stuff. And,
same old, right?
Yeah, and actually, I managed to finally install a piece of software I bought back in the fall that I'm kind of excited about. Manga Studio, I picked up a copy of it when they had a sale back in November. It was on for like $20, $30.
Nice.
Anyway, I couldn't find the install files. I went through and I deleted a bunch of my emails, but I ended up finding it eventually and got it set up, and it's a pretty sweet program, so I look forward to playing with it. So probably in the next week or two I'll have a review of that, even though it's version 4, I guess.
Well, a lot of people are complaining that the new version is not as nice as the, I guess, one just previous. Manga Studio 5?
Manga Studio 5 is the one they currently have. So.
Right, so 4 went on sale probably when they released.
Yeah, so it'll probably be a week or two beforehand, I guess. But yeah, it's... Right. The Manga Studio EX4 is the one I picked up. So
well,
I'm $300. So
I'm going to recommend a YouTube channel for you. Okay. His name is Kevin Wolf with two F's. Easy to find if you search for him. He and I kind of followed one another back and forth on DeviantArt, and then again on Twitter. And he inks for DC. He does some really cool professional comic art. And after watching his videos, I'm pretty darn sure that he inks in Manga Studio.
I know Scotty does, so.
Yeah, no, Scotty Young does as well, but the stuff that he does is very, Kevin's right now is very kind of, I guess what you would call canon, like traditional big three comic sort of stuff.
Nice.
Scotty tends to be kind of so his own style that, I mean, you learn a lot, but you kind of learn how Scotty draws Scotty.
Yeah.
You know? But yeah, I feel like there's a lot of really cool tips just from watching. I mean, Kevin's videos are, you know, 10 minutes, 12 minutes, 5 minutes, depending on what he's doing. He doesn't show you the whole page. He kind of probably is under contract not allowed to, but he kind of just kind of throws stuff out there. But it's very cool. And I don't remember. I think his Twitter handle is just his name. I could be wrong.
I'll find it anyway. So
yeah. Well, he and I are following each other back and forth, and it's recent, so you can probably find us in our recent followers and listen to stuff like that. So, I've been actually doing a lot of work this week myself. I'm nearing the end of the Indiegogo campaign fulfillment stuff for StarCross Volume 1, which is, I mean, god damn near 6 months later. It's taken a huge, huge amount of work to get this stuff done, but I've seen the light at the end of the tunnel. I'm down to like the half dozen or dozen big packages with, like, you know, original art and comics and stuff. So I'm now kind of doing some homemade packaging to get that kind of stuff out there, but I'm also designing t-shirts, which is really, really fun. Thinking about having, you know, for those of you that might remember from my Indiegogo campaign, I've got a little teddy bear in kind of like an S&M outfit, and that's going to be the ladies' t-shirts, and then the guys' t-shirts are just, it's just a coffee cup, the kind of like the iconic, you know, Starbucks / you know, insert cafe plastic coffee cup here image that I draw in my comic all the time. But the cool thing is that because I'm now doing this t-shirts through /loot.com and not locally, I can offer more than just one color of the t-shirt. So the shirt itself can be either black, gray, or white. And then the color on the shirt can also be different. So I'm offering both black and pink in terms of the ink on the teddy bear for the girls. And then for the guys, I think I'm going to offer a black ink or a full colored version with like a brown cardboard sleeve and like the, you know, the shading and stuff on the cup. So it's going to be pretty cool. And I don't think I have to limit the designs to guys and girls. Like, I think once they're done, I can actually offer the coffee cup for a girl's shirt if they would prefer that. So it gives me much more freedom to do the kind of print on demand with /loot.com. So I'm really looking forward to getting those done and out there, and they should be done this week, knock on wood. The sound you're not hearing is me knocking on my own forehead because it's been a busy week, but that is all good. If you the listener are new to the Citadel Cafe, this is where myself and Peyton and sometimes a guest come to hang out, talk about the things that we're into lately. We gravitate towards fantasy, sci-fi, entertainment, but we, you know, branch off into other things as we see fit. And of course, over the last few weeks, we have been celebrating the return of our Winter is Coming Season 3, which is the Game of Thrones segment that we throw in here to our movies, TV, and video section. And this week is no different. We're going to dive right in. There is going to be spoilers. So if you have not seen the latest episode of Game of Thrones Season 3, please pause, return to us later. If you are listening a couple days from now, then what we can do is usually post a time code in the blog post as to when you can skip ahead to surpass the spoilers and then go on to the rest of the show. So for right now, we're dealing with Season 3, Episode 4, which is entitled, And Now His Watch Has Ended. The episode synopsis basically runs down as Jaime steals a sword and tries to fight his captors, but is immediately defeated. Bran, with the aid of Jojen Reed, continues to chase the Three-Eyed Crow. Arya and Gendry are taken to the secret cave of the Brotherhood Without Banners, where they meet Beric Dondarrion, who is a new character to, I think, most people watching the show. There's also some stuff with Theon Greyjoy, Daenerys, of course, and even a little Tyrion in the kind of mid-show. So I guess we can allow our guests to kind of take off with any kind of, I guess, strong points that you felt were notes to hit on in this episode. What do you think? What was your first impression just kind of having seen the fourth episode?
Well, I got to say, and I don't know if it's the season or what, but I am fairly lost now when it comes to this show. My wife and I both are kind of feeling this story is starting to get pretty complex, and there's a lot going on, and everything's kind of building to something big this season. I definitely feel like it's all building to something really pretty awesome. But gosh, and like I'm having trouble like remembering characters' names, who's sleeping with who's related to who, like where everything is involved. So especially this episode, when the Terrell girl. I can't think of her name.
Marjorie.
Now. Mm-hmm. Marjorie. She is basically now, she's, you know, putting her hooks into Joffrey and trying to seize the throne in some ways. And I, for some reason, I was thinking that Sansa, she was not married, but they were going to get married or something, and somehow she got pushed aside. I don't know when all this happened. I don't remember it. My wife and I were kind of looking at each other confused, like, isn't she supposed to, like, is this, you know, I don't really know what's going on there.
Mm-hmm.
Am I the only one who's sort of feeling like a little lost in where this is going now? Or?
Well, I'll throw it to Peyton because just to kind of put out there, Matt, you haven't read the books?
I have not, okay, and that's on purpose, but I feel like maybe I should go back and start reading them now.
Well, you know, you might benefit from reading the first couple because that's been covered in the first two seasons, so you're not going to spoil anything. Mm-hmm. But also I have, so I'll obviously keep any spoilers ahead of this season to myself. But Peyton, how do you feel about, you know, having not read the books and this being your first time through? Is it starting to get a little thick for you too?
No, actually, I actually remember the moment when, like, you know, the battle of the Blackwater, when, you know, the father comes in with the what are the names? Tigerians, whatever, come in with them. And, as they save the city, giving her to Joffrey, and, you know, not having him marry this traitor's daughter,
okay,
you know, sort
okay.
of thing, is sort of a, you know, way of saying, well, thanks for your help. You know, we'll make her queen now, right?
Right.
And,
okay.
So that was sort of taken care of in the last season, but the bit where she, you know, she's definitely playing the game, and her, you know, walking up the stairs and she looks over the shoulder at Cersei, sort of like, you know, check this out, right? Because,
yeah,
you
know, Marjorie's,
I'm better run things here now. So.
Yeah, Marjorie is able to manipulate Joffrey pretty handily because she understands the kind of what is the word that Cersei used, macabre little SOB that he is. So she's kind of playing to his passions.
Because everyone thinks that he's a deviant. She's like, no, you're king. You can do whatever you want, right? So just to make him feel normal and then make him feel loved by the public, and Maybe she'll find some good in him. Who knows? But
I feel she's gonna probably come to a very terrible end. Like, to me, it's like this cannot work out well for her. You know, Joffrey's gonna get tired of her. He's gonna want somebody else, or she's gonna say the wrong thing at the wrong time, and he's gonna do some terrible things.
I really wouldn't think she. I think she's probably been raised by the grandmother to really know how to play the game. Because when Varys goes and talks to the grandmother and voices his concerns around Sansa, you know, later on, she goes and she talks to Sansa, like, you're going to marry my brother, we're going to be sisters, it's going to be all great, and all this fun stuff, because, you know, whoever has Sansa, because she's next in line, controls the North after Robb's dead, right? So
Sure.
Yeah, so, and the thing that's what's even more complicated and a little comical about the whole thing with Sansa being married off into the Tyrells is that the husband of choice, who Sansa has a huge crush on, is also the same person that Renly had a huge crush on in second season, and well, first season too, as a matter of fact, which is Loras Tyrell, which is the, you know, Knight of Flowers, and it's no pun intended, but he's obviously not interested in women, and so it's going to be it would be a marriage for pure political reasons.
Now, is that commonly known? Do the other characters in the show know that?
I feel like it's some of it is known and some of it not. Renly, it was known about Renly. I don't think anybody knew who Renly was sleeping with. I feel like the Tyrells might be a little bit better at keeping that under wraps.
Yeah, sure.
Margaery is certainly keeping it to herself because this season Joffrey has expressed his distaste for homosexuality as a perversion and, you know, wanting to try and get the death penalty out there for people that, you know, swing that way. And so they're treating it with a very, I guess, delicate knife where, I mean, it's widely accepted in the public, but as far as royalty and higher families are concerned, they really kind of look down upon it. So there's kind of two sides to the coin. I feel like there's other characters that are homosexual in the show as well. I'm trying to remember. I feel like there's, I don't know if it's been that obvious, but I think some of the Night's Watch guys are, and some of the it's been hinted at before with Tyrion's masked men of the guys that wanted to kill goats and all that kind of stuff, the army that Tyrion brought with him when he first came back to King's Landing, they didn't seem to have a preference. It was like one or the other. It wasn't, you know, so there's a, you know, some interesting, I guess, well, the whole show is kind of over sex to begin with, but
right. Well,
yeah, it's one of those things that they do dance around. I mean, I'm curious as to whether they're going to be able to play through that story with Sansa and Loras Tyrell, just given the material, the volume of material in book three, because it is a very, very big book. And I know that they're splitting the book into two seasons, but even then, like, there's just a lot. And I don't remember, it's been so long since I've read book three that I don't remember the exact timing of things. So sometimes they've changed stuff. Sometimes some agendas have been accelerated for the television show and then others have not. Like the Night's Watch stuff is moving much faster, which is good because the Night's Watch stuff in book three was so long and drawn out.
That took a pretty nasty turn really quickly.
Oh, jeez, like, I guess it did. That look, I know, like, at some point people are going to get sick of me comparing the stuff to the books, but one thing that they handled really well in the show is that you didn't see Mormont's death coming, and it really pisses you off. Like, to know that that little shit bully that was giving Sam a hard time on the road was the one that stabbed Mormont in the back. Like, all of a sudden, it's like you guys remember in Lord of the Rings where, you know, they beat Sauron and they you turn the page and now they're walking home and that's it. Like, the whole thing, like, and then we won. And it just feels like it happens in the course of a page or two. Well, that's what happened when Mormont dies. It's like one minute he's alive and fighting and the next minute he's got a sword through his chest and he's dead. And you're just like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
He was like one of my favorite North characters. Like, what the hell? You know, and you just, it really just not shook me, but like, because you already know when they kill Eddard Stark that, you know, no one is safe.
Yeah.
in the series. But yeah, Mormont's death really, really got to me. How did you guys feel about the whole scene with Craster?
Well, the idea of Craster, the guy, like the old man there with the 99 sons and all that stuff, like, you know, why they just didn't do that in the first place? Like, is he holding something back? You know, he's a God fearing man, or what? God, you know.
Well, he's giving his sons to the White Walkers.
Yeah, right. So, you know, does that mean he has, you know, favor with them, and they will do his bidding if need be? Right. So
I don't know if they do his bidding so much as they maybe just leave him alone.
Yeah. So now that they killed him, like, what happens now? You know. How does that play out in the grand scheme of things? And what's going to happen to all these women that are there? And anyway.
I'm kind of glad they didn't get too into what was hinted at as to what happens to all those women there, because
probably in the last episode what they were talking about, you put a sword, every man has a beast, you put a sword in his hand.
Yeah, well, and you're talking about, you know, guys of the Night's Watch that have been celibate for however long they've been there, you know, forbidden to take wives or women or lands or lordship. So I mean, you see the nasty side of the Night's Watch in book three, with the death of Mormont and the rabble that come up.
It was quite funny though when they were you know, and his watches ended and they were burning him on the pyre, and they're talking about, you know, how hungry they were, and one of the guys, like, who would have thought he smelled so good?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, like, just tear off a little strip of fatty. Yeah.
Yeah. I thought the acting in that scene was really good. Some of the guys who I had not been paying much attention to before, when they spoke up against Craster, the anger and just the venom in their voices was very, very clear. And I really felt like it was clear something was going to go down. You weren't exactly sure what, but you're like, oh, this is not just going to be a conversation, then we cut to some other scene. Like, some shit is going to go down right now. And I thought it was really well done. I like how quick everything happens too. Like, it's not like these long, you know, Errol Flynn sword fights that last for freaking ever. You know, it's like clang, clang. Oh, he's dead. You know, this guy doesn't even see a dagger coming. Craster just got a dagger in the face and, you know, didn't even get to swing his sword once, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, that was the one guy I didn't mind seeing die, because he was a crotchety old bastard. Yeah. I didn't like him at all.
What's going to happen with Sam and his adopted family?
Yeah, really though, right?
How far are they going
to
get?
Yeah. Although you got to see Sam speak up too. Like, I mean, he's so mousy all the time until that very last moment where he's like, we have to go right now. And you're like, whoa, geez.
Yeah.
Sam's got a pair. When did that happen? Yeah.
I think the bully will probably get a throat cut by Sam, which would be awesome. So
Foreshadowing, according to Peyton. Yeah. Nice, nice, nice.
Who hasn't read the book?
Yes. Yeah, precisely, precisely. I really enjoyed, speaking of sword fighting, I really enjoyed the stuff that happened with Jamie and Brian.
Yeah.
I thought it was kind of interesting how the only time you really get to see Jamie attempt anything serious with a sword, for the most part of the series, is with his left hand.
Yeah.
Mm. You know, and it's interesting to see how down he is. And I thought, you know, knowing who we had on the show tonight, all of us being artists, I'm not sure whether you're right or left-handed, Matt, but I mean, imagine, you know, you're in a car accident and your drawing hand is severed, you know, at the wrist. I mean, akin to losing your sword hand if you're a soldier, you know, in the time frame that that Game of Thrones is set. So, I mean, I can only imagine.
Well, and that hand also keeps you alive, you know, because you're able to fight with that hand, and you train all your life with that hand, and for you to lose it, and then for it to be hanging around your neck as if it's some trophy or some constant reminder, that just seemed absolutely cruel.
Yeah.
I wonder if he'll always have the hand with him, if he'll adopt that, you know?
Kind of like how, what's his face there? Davos has had his fingers in a little pouch around his neck.
Yeah.
Before they get blown off in the Blackwater.
Yeah. Foreshadow 20 years down the road and Jaime is the hand of the king.
Yeah, well, it depends, right? I mean, on who's king and because that's just like, that's an appointed position.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like if Joffrey remains king and something happens to Tywin, who's, I mean, not a young man anyway, then, I mean, Jaime's already King's Guard. I could imagine that Joffrey would appoint him. Certainly, if Cersei has anything to do with it, she would encourage, you know, Jaime as the hand of the king.
And his, my God, names are escaping me here now. Not Tywin, the short one, the imp. What's his name again?
Tyrion.
Tyrion, thank you. You know, Tyrion smacked him years ago, so, you know, he won't forget that either, right? He won't be coming hand again anytime soon, I don't think.
Oh, jeez.
But yeah, it was nice though, the moment between Brienne and Jamie. She's like, I know what you did, and you told them that, you know, it was the Sapphire Islands, and, you know, do you understand? And I know you lied. Why'd you do that, right? And he didn't answer. So
she's like,
you know, you're a coward. You're like a woman. Eat something, right?
Well, and it was really telling too. Like, I mean, everybody watching the show thinks losing a hand is a big deal, and it is, but. She's looking at it in terms of, you know, warfare, how many people lose limbs or die or, you know, are, you know, have wounds that they never recover from, just in everyday life as a peasant or on the vanguard. So she's looking at him like, you've got one bit of misfortune that happens to you. You know, you're still a Lannister. You're still who you were before. You just don't have a hand. You know, it's like, so suck it up, fuzzball, and just deal. You know, like everybody, like there's people that have been suffering far more than that. You know, people that have lost children and all the kind of stuff that she kind of alludes to. And it kind of, he doesn't say anything. I don't know if I'd want him to say anything, but he just kind of picks up the bread and starts to eat. And you're just kind of like, well, she's getting through to him somehow.
Yeah, and I wonder how they're going to treat Jamie throughout the arc of the series. Because, you know, he is... You know, the incest thing is one thing, you know, but he did, you know, try to kill that kid.
Yeah, oh, he tried to, you know, to shove Bran out the window.
Yeah, you know, and he's the one, you know, who brought, you know, Ned Stark and all that stuff in, right? So, you know, they could be brewing this romance here in the center, right, of his story arc. But in the end of the day, you know, he's not a, well, you know, I guess he has his own set of morals, but he's not a good guy.
No, exactly, right?
So,
exactly.
I mean, you might have some, you know, like a situational romance like they could develop. You know, it could be fine, but at the end of the day, it's not going to work in the real world.
Yeah. Right? And in the books, when they do chapters, they do them by name. So it's, you know, Bran or Daenerys or, you know, Catelyn or whoever. And in the first two books, you only ever hear about Jaime through the eyes of either a Stark or somebody else. In book three, it's the first time you actually get to have Jaime chapters where he's actually then you get to hear his inner monologue. And it's one of the things that Jocelyn brought up while we were watching this episode is how interesting and rounded and not good as in a good person, but how good a character Jamie is, because you get to see inside his head. And no, he's not a nice guy. He's still, you know, the bad guy. He's on the black side of the fence. But you get to learn a lot more about what motivates him, the issues with, you know, obviously the issues that he has with his dad, which we saw a little bit of in season one. Like, there's just a lot there. And so you don't necessarily like him, but you find yourself not hating him as much, which is weird, considering, like, you know, you keep on reminding yourself, no, this guy shoved a 10-year-old out the window. Like, this is bad. We're not supposed to like these kind of guys.
Well, he could have a change of heart, you know.
Yeah.
By the end of this whole adventure, mm-hmm. You know, you never know where this could go. Having your hand chopped off, I imagine, you know, could change you. So.
Yeah. Well, there is that. Yeah, there is that. But I mean, it's funny how a lot of the motivation for characters is all stemmed from, like, personal injury or some sort of deep-rooted trauma that then motivates them for the rest of their lives. And I think one of the scenes that I do not remember at all from the book, I'm sure it happened, Jocelyn seemed to remember it, but the scene where we get to see Tyrion and talk to Varys about how Varys became a eunuch and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, what did you guys think of that?
Awesome. I'm like, he doesn't have the guy in there because he'd be dead by now. What are you, like, you know, shipping him? But I'm like, that's pretty badass. But it also helps allude to the magic in the world and all that stuff, right?
Yeah, well, and not to mention the fact that I'm just like, the whole scene, what's in the box?
Yeah.
What's in the box? Like, I mean, Jocelyn could tell that I didn't remember, so she kept she kept quiet, right? And I was just kind of like, what is in the goddamn box?
Yeah.
He's opening it a little bit of an inch, and you can see it on Tyrion's face, too. He's just like, would you just open the fucking box?
Yeah. And I think that also makes Varys in Tyrion's eyes more of an ally. Now you're like, oh, you get it totally. And you know,
It's great how little scenes like that can take a character that I care nothing about and make them like, oh, I love this character now. I can't wait to see where this character goes and what happens. And you know, the way that little bits like that kind of get injected in the story and really revitalizes some things for you. It's really exciting.
Yeah, I mean, I'm actually a little bit disappointed that we didn't get more from Tyrion this episode. Like, that was kind of it.
Yeah.
You know, there wasn't really a whole lot going on, and I really enjoy him.
There was a fun little moment when they were talking about his squire.
Oh, jeez. when Varys and, is it Roz? Like, Roslyn? I can't remember her name. The Littlefinger's lady friend.
It was Roslyn, yeah.
It's
hard to explain. It's like, okay, right? Like, wow.
Yeah. And what's really funny too that is like she's explaining, you know, like the prowess in bed of this, you know, probably 14-year-old, 16-year-old kid that's squiring for Tyrion to a eunuch.
Yeah.
Like, right. There couldn't have been more of an extreme.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
What was it the grandmother said to Varys, though?
Oh, she was like, what happens when the non-existent bump up against the decrepit?
Yeah.
Or
there's a t-shirt for you.
Oh my god. God, Orlena Tyrell is just,
she's beautiful.
Oh, she's priceless. That both the writing for her and the actor that plays her is just brilliant.
Yeah. Great writing.
Just brilliant. I kind of want to look up to see, like, there's some actors that are coming out in this movie, or not this movie, it feels like a movie, this TV show, that I kind of want to go and look up their history on IMDb and find out what else they've been in. You know, because I mean, like, if she plays like snarky grandmother in other films, I kind of want to see that. You know, especially if she's like in a modern day sort of sense where she can, you know, drop cuss bombs and, you know, swear at grandchildren and stuff like that. I think that would be freaking hilarious.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. So, speaking of all the stuff that happened at the Capitol, one of my favorite scenes, which was very short, and I feel kind of, just not vindicated, but I really enjoyed the exchange between Cersei and Tywin.
Yeah.
The simplicity of what I liked about it was that he just has pure contempt for stupidity.
Yeah.
That's it. He doesn't care whether you're man, woman, horse, dog, whatever. If you're dumb, he has got no freaking time for you. And I always thought that Cersei was playing the whole, oh, woe is me. I've got the brains of a man in a woman's body. Like, you know, whatever am I to do? And she throws it at Tywin and he throws it right back at there. Like, it's not because you're a woman. It's because you think that you're smarter than you actually are.
Yeah.
Oh, just, I was like, yes. I can't stand Cersei. She just claws on chalkboard for me. Like, I just, in a good way. Like, I mean, the actor does a good job, but just the character, just, I want to throw her out of a window.
Well, at the moment, you know, she has been developing some pretty serious enemies, and she is losing her grip on the throne. You know, even the conversation with between Sansa and New Girl about how, you know, Queen Set could never leave King's Landing. She's like, the Queen Regent, soon I'm going to be Queen. And she's mm-hmm. like, oh, yeah, all right. Like, yeah, she's losing her grip on power.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, he even says, like, I mean, I wish you could manipulate Joffrey like Margaery does. At least I can control, you know, at least I can try to manipulate the Tyrells and therefore manipulate Joffrey through Margaery. Like, he just... Mm-hmm. You know, I'm still not sure what Tywin has planned. Like I said, it's been so long since I've read the book, so I don't remember how things unfold, which is kind of nice. Like, it's nice to not be worried about being spoiled if I need to look something up on Wikipedia, like if I don't remember who a character is or what their history is. Yeah. But it's also kind of nice that it's been so long since I've read book three that some of this stuff is still, like, I've forgotten it. You know, it's still new to me when it happens.
Yeah.
So, well, I guess it's time to talk about what the entire internet has been talking about for the last 4 days, which is the last 4 minutes of this episode. We talked last week a little bit about both Daenerys and Rob. Rob also was missing from this episode, as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
Kind of stepping up and being more regal, more queen-like or king-like. And boy, oh boy, does Daenerys ever drop the hammer.
Yeah.
I mean,
I called it.
Yeah, you did. You absolutely did. Peyton was right every step of the way, which is impressive because, you know, not knowing where things are going. Matt, did you call this? Did you know what she had planned after watching episode 3 and then episode 4?
I love this show because it makes me kind of feel like an idiot. And I don't know why that even the most obvious, what should be the most obvious things, it always, you know, hits me out of left field. And I love it. I love it because I'm surprised every time something happens. I'm like, oh, I didn't even think about that. And, you know, last week I was thinking, and my wife and I both were thinking, well, how is she going to, she's not going to just give up a dragon. Like, this is crazy. Like, why would she do something like this? Like, clearly she must have some plan. Like, maybe the dragon will fly back to her at some point, you know? But when they had everyone all lined up there in front, you know, and, I can't think of the guy's name, the guy that was selling the mentor, whatever. The master guy. As soon as he says, you may want to bleed these men early. There's some small villages along the way you could plunder. I was like, I know it's going to happen now.
Yeah. And as soon as she's like, you know, hi, Valerian is my mother tongue. You're like, oh shit. Like, it's on now, buddy.
I told my wife, I was like, I think I know what's going to happen. And then she says, you know, a dragon would not be a slave. I'm like, this is going to be good.
Yeah. I mean, you really, especially after, you know, kind of putting up with at least two episodes, if not three, of this guy basically bad mouthing her and being extraordinarily rude to her in High Valyrian, thinking that he can't understand. And then having, what's her name? Jiqui, I think is the little handmaiden that is now with Daenerys, that was mm-hmm. translating. And mm-hmm. she was always trying to translate, you know, politely and at least trying not to be completely vulgar with everything. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was thinking in my head, like, I'm pretty sure she speaks Valyrian. Like, I'm pretty sure she knows what's going on. And I mean, and Peyton called it last week with, you know, Daenerys being just so sure about this decision. She's like, oh, something is up. Something is happening. And it was one of my favorite moments in Daenerys' story in this book was when she decided to sack, what was it called? Slaver's Bay, I think is where she is. I don't know. There's something about the way that she kind of, it might be because I've watched it recently, but do you remember in the original, Richard Donner, Superman movie when Reeves takes off his glasses and he gets about 3 inches taller?
Yeah.
When he puffs up before he starts talking like Superman.
Yeah.
It's like Daenerys did that. It's like she walked in, she handed the dragon, she took the whip and she turned around to speak to the Unsullied, I can never remember how to pronounce it. And she just, like, she's standing tall. She's bellowing in this Valyrian, which is as awesome to listen to as like Elvish or something else. And it just has this weight to it. You're like, oh, snap.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Things are going to get really, really bad for these people.
She's my favorite character in the show. And she constantly surprises me. And she's so small and delicate and beautiful that I constantly forget that she is like a force to be reckoned with. And every time she rears up and you know, displays her power and her intelligence, she gets me every time. Like I am the idiot in this whole situation, you know. It's like, oh yeah, that's right. You know, she is a badass, you know? So
absolutely. Yeah. the dragon looked amazing too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're absolutely beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah, the effects are great in the show this season. Although that the sacking of that city, it's absolutely clear that they maybe need to throw a little more money at because you have this like these great, you know, giant army sort of lined up here, and then they cut away to shots of like what's clearly like six guys that are like stabbing at random people. Cut to the same six guys against a different wall stabbing at random people. Like, you know, you don't get that sort of the wide shot of the entire sacking and, you know, the real sort of epic stuff that you would like. I feel like maybe if HBO like started a Kickstarter campaign, like, you know, give us money and we'll put better effects in Game of Thrones, like they could.
Yeah, they might be saving their pennies for the later episodes though.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, well, that did, I feel like that did happen in season two when you've got this battle of the Blackwater. And even when we were talking about it on the show last year, we were kind of complaining that things were, you know, a little bit slow. There's a lot of talking head scenes and stuff like that right up until episode 9, when it was like nothing but battle from the moment the show started to the end. It was nothing but fight. And I, again, like, I don't remember, but I mean, obviously she has an army now. He alluded to towns and cities nearby. So, I mean, there's some fighting coming, with, you know, obviously she's got three dragons that are free to reign all this kind of stuff. She's no longer at sea right now. So I feel like there's probably going to be some more of that coming. But I do know what you mean. I felt that there was a lot of smoke. I was like, I understand that there's dragons and they're going to burn stuff, but like, come on, like, I can't see anything.
Yeah, well, and that's on purpose, obviously. So yeah, they can keep the... And yeah, I understand you have to like sort of pick and choose your battles when it comes to what effects you're going to put in the show or not. Mm-hmm. But the show is so epic and beautiful and wonderful. It conjures up images of the Lord of the Rings and what they were able to do in those movies. And, you know, the battles are so huge and so great in those movies, and you don't get that in the show, which is fine. It's, you know, a TV series. You're not going to be able to do everything you want, but they are throwing a lot of money at the show this season. I've seen a lot of advertising and that can't be cheap, you know? So
they're
doing a good job there.
And having that much smoke in there as well, you know, especially after the city's been sacked, it helps in a very quick and efficient manner just show the audience that the city itself has been completely sacked and
know,
it's done and it's ruined. You know, they didn't do what they did with the what's the place they burned down where they had all of the guys chained up earlier, Aaron Hall. They didn't show it like that, right? But you know, and they could have, but you know, that would have been a fair bit more of the budget, right? One of the scenes I liked though, like with the smoke, was when you showed Mormont, looking at her, and if you notice, at no point did she actually look him in the eye. She didn't look at him once.
Yeah.
Right. So especially saying after they questioned her that time, and then she said to her new handmaiden, you know, we're not men. Then you know, I think at this point she's sort of making a shift there as well. So she'll probably keep the two guys around to advise and stuff, but you know, I think the closeness that he was probably developing with her might fall aside, I guess.
Yeah, that's a good call. Feel like another key point of that whole scene too was neither Mormont nor, oh goodness, I forget his name, the other knight that just joined them, neither one of them say anything.
Yeah.
They don't even really say anything to one another.
Yeah.
They're just completely speechless. You know?
They're like, oh, there she goes again.
Yeah. Well, the thing that I guess, I mean, as a final thought for the episode, something that I've been noticing more so this season, but it's always been true, is that the music is absolutely epic. Really builds up in this last scene, but the whole show and the whole season so far, the music has been wonderful, and I'm really looking forward to getting the soundtrack.
Yeah.
Any final thoughts on the show from you guys?
Theon. He got screwed.
Boy, oh boy, I guess he did.
Yeah. I'm still trying to figure out who it is. I'm like, you know, I assume they're flailing, but like, is that guy on his father's side or is that guy on one of the other sides? I don't know. But anyway.
Yeah. And you, sir? Matt?
Oh, I'm waiting for great things from Arya, the littlest Stark. She, you know, trained by this great sword master, and yet we haven't really seen her get to use her newfound skills yet. You know, I'm waiting for it. You know, I thought it was coming this episode. There was that scene where, you know, who am I going to fight? That little girl. I'm like, oh, I kind of want to see that.
That would be awesome.
We may see it here in the near future. Who knows?
The Arya dog kind of relationship is definitely something to watch now that she kind of is the one that throws him under the bus. It's like, yeah. He is a murderer. He murdered my friend. Right, screw this guy. Yeah. Take him out at the knees. I don't care.
Let me do it.
Yeah, really, though. Give her needle and let her poke him full of holes.
Where is needle?
Somebody took it.
Is it lost?
I don't know. Somebody has it. I don't remember who has it now. When did she lose it? She had it when she...
Yeah, captured and Buddy stabbed that kid in the throat with it, right?
Right. So somebody has it in the Lannister... No, the guys were working for Clegane, I think. So the Mountain, I think his men, one of those guys has it or something. That's the last I remember from the TV show anyway. I think, unfortunately, they kind of lose track. Like, something that's very subtle, even in the books, that you don't get is that, you know, Ice, Eddard Stark's sword?
Yeah.
Mm. It's what they use to behead him. And Ilan Payne, the executioner, keeps it and carries it around. Mm. And he still has it. Like, they don't make a big deal about it at all. I mean, the sword has a freaking name, and they still don't, like, really pay attention as to who has it and what happens to it. You know, so it's not until they do revisit on it in the books. So, they do kind of come back. Because, I mean, the whole series is called A Song of Ice and Fire, right?
Sure.
So I'm curious if they're going to make a big deal about that. Like, ceremonially? I can't speak tonight. Ceremonially. Thank you. Is that a word?
Sure.
It is now. ceremoniously. Ha!
There you go.
Joel? One, words, zero. I wonder if they're going to make a big deal out of what happens to Ice, given that Ilan Payne still has it and he works for the Lannisters and all that kind of stuff. Because I think it was on the list of things that Rob wanted to get back.
Okay.
So, anyway. Moving on to some other videos and stuff. I really didn't get to watch a whole lot. I'm still watching V, still liking V. Peyton, you mentioned something in the pre-show that is actually part of a listener email we'll get to later. But Matt, what have you been watching? Anything that kind of tickles your fancy or did not tickle your fancy outside of the Game of Thrones?
Well, this week I watched Hunger Games. Mm. I don't know how much I want to be spoiling this movie because I don't know who.
Nah, it's been out for like a year.
Yeah. So here's the thing: the movie, like I had heard good stuff about it, right? People seem to like it. It's very popular. So I was like, okay, I'll finally get around to watching this thing. And I think it's on Netflix Watch Instantly now, which is how I saw it. Terrible movie. Completely devoid of intelligence. Like, just one of the most vapid, like, it assaulted and insulted my mind. Can I stress how much I hate this movie any more than this? It was interesting because it's this, you know, I mean, it's a movie about basically kids who there's a game called The Hunger Games where they kind of release kids out into the wild and they have to fight each other to the death. So you would think that a film that sort of has that theme to explore about, you know, kids being forced to fight each other to death would have moral ambiguity, or, you know, characters that undergo like character development, but no, it doesn't. The main character in the film, Catelyn, she's never forced to confront, you know, her moral sort of center, and to do anything that would, you know, compromise that. She volunteers for her sister, who was. Her, you know, she was drafted into the games or whatever you call it. And she's like, no, let me go instead. I volunteer for my sister. And that's handled really clumsily, I think, in my opinion. And she says goodbye to her sister and leaves, and then that's it. Like, that's the last of that sort of theme is explored in this film. When she's out in the woods, kind of like hunting, or I should say being hunted by these kids, like, weird stuff happens that is kind of out of the blue. The ending of the film is, it comes together quickly and does so in a pretty hard to swallow way. And the film, like, it seems to go out of its way to keep from doing anything interesting or exciting. And I think the reason why this upsets me so much is because Ender's Game is coming out this year.
Mm, that's right.
Which is a film I've been nervous about for a very long time, because I think, in my opinion, Ender's Game may be the most important science fiction property since maybe Star Wars, because it's this, it's an opportunity to get young kids interested in science fiction who may not be interested otherwise, you know. I think the story of Ender's Game is really tight, and there's a lot of complexity and interesting sort of moral ambiguity, and you're dealing with small children that are sort of forced to fight each other in ways that's similar to Hunger Games. Ender's Game is being produced by the same studio that did Hunger Games. Hmm. So I'm now very concerned that, and again, I haven't read the Hunger Games novel, so I don't know if the novel has teeth to it, or if it really is as you know, ridiculous as this movie was. But I'm afraid that they're going to take all the teeth out of Ender's Game, because they're trying to make it, you know, for a broad audience, or they're trying to, you know, they're dealing with much younger kids in Ender's Game, obviously. So are they going to, you know, take the teeth out of what's a really interesting story in order to sort of water down and make it suitable for a screen or whatever, you know what I'm saying there?
I do. My sister and I went to go see Hunger Games, if I'm not mistaken. And I had the same reaction that you did. Andrea, my sister, read and loved the books. She had completed at least the first two, I think, by the time we saw the first movie.
Right.
And she liked it, being a book fan. But okay. I think the error that they made was specifically what you described as the non-character development, the characters don't examine their own compass. They're coaxed along by an invisible hand. Like, they're just do the next thing because that's what happens in this story.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that was, I think, a part of a studio trying to get a heavy cash grab in the box office for a very popular book. The book was right up there, not quite with Twilight, but it was in the same sort of vein. It's kind of teen fiction, sci-fi, thriller, romance stuff.
Right.
And Andrea loved it. She thought it was well written. She liked that it was much darker than other stuff that she's read. Like, you know, she was thinking, like, man, like, you know, there's death, there's, like, they murder one another, there's all the stuff that happens, and you don't get the severity of that from the movie at all, right? And that's what I asked Andrea, because I left kind of going, it was kind of, you know, not great. And Andrea's like, well, you know, I liked it, but I can see where you're coming from. Like, it wasn't a really great movie. It was more of just fan service, and that's where I think it falls flat. Peyton, did you see The Hunger Games? I don't remember.
Yeah, no, I did see it, and it was, I think it served its purpose, which was to be a filler in between Twilight films and give the Twilight fans something to look forward to after their beloved franchise ended.
Right. Did anybody involved in Twilight, were they involved in Hunger Games, do we know?
No idea.
I don't remember. I don't think so. I mean, I don't keep track of any of this stuff. I mean, like, I did see, to my unfortunate demise, the first Twilight film years and years ago when it first came out. I mean, 2 hours of my life I'll never ever get back. But I certainly have not returned to see any of the others, and I can't compare any of the other Twilight films to Hunger Games, but I just, it just doesn't really turn my crank. I've heard of Ender's Game. I haven't read it though. Which is, you know, probably a minus geek cred for me. But I do find myself with a little bit more reading time lately, so maybe I'll buy it on iPad or something. It's available, and maybe read it on an ebook or something.
It's one of my favorite science fiction books. I haven't revisited it in years, but I read it as a kid, and it's got a really great twist ending, which was very surprising to me as a child in the 80s reading it. But I don't know how surprising it would be nowadays, because you see that you see that kind of twist revisited quite often in television and other properties now. And so
it's hard when something that is original and groundbreaking in the 80s is now what's seen as almost a television trope, right? Because everybody that was inspired as a child in the 80s by these epic sci-fi movies, like, you know, Star Trek, Star Wars, Ender's Game, Blade Runner, like all that kind of stuff, they're all in their 30s now or 40s and they're all making stuff in Hollywood, you know? So it's easy to see where it all comes from.
And that twist has very far-reaching consequences, and I don't know how well they're going to be able to sell it and really pull it off. I mean, the thing with Hunger Games, to return to that for one moment, the movie seems to be split into two sections. There's a section where the first half of the film is training for the Hunger Games, and the second half of the film is the Hunger Games themselves. So the first half of the film is this training, and it's just her going along with the training. Like at one point there's the parade where you're sort of paraded out amongst all the people, and her trainer guy, the Lenny Kravitz character, says, you know, well, we want to make you stand out. We don't want to just dress you up in some silly costume. So what does he do? He dresses her up in some silly costume. It's like, so the entire first part of the film is just her going along with it. In the second half of the film, the Hunger Games themselves, it's just her going along with it. And whenever any sort of complicated scenario arises, there's a parachute from the sky with whatever magical thing she needs to keep pushing forward and keep going along with it. And I was very upset. I wanted to finish the film in one night, and I was up till 2 o'clock in the morning trying to watch this thing. So I was upset and tired at the same time.
Yelling at the screen and by yourself.
What have you done to me, Hunger Games? too funny. Well, I guess to move things along here a little bit, we've got to keep the show moving into the Internet Minute, where we all have a pick to share with you. I'll go first because it's just a short website to share. It's called sketchtoy.com, and I found this via Jessie Sarah on Twitter, who is Jessie Greenberg. She is a storyboard artist and animator, and she was just doing like an evening doodle before she went to bed last night and shared it on Twitter. And it is a website that is a web app that just simply records a doodle. I mean, it's limited in functionality. There's a bunch of different brush sizes and an eraser. There's an undo button, and there's some different colors you can choose from. Again, limited. But what's cool about it is that it automatically records what you're doing, and then you can then share the video with friends via social media, etc. It also allows you to add a line boil to the drawing. So after you're finished a line, it doesn't stay still. It stays quite active, and it has that sort of boily feel that you see with a lot of instructional videos and kind of like advertisements online and stuff like that. And I really liked it. I thought it was a very cute app. It's something that I think would be very fun just to kind of get a quick idea out to the masses and have it be very interactive, in terms of that people are not just going to see your image for 5 seconds on Twitter and then keep moving. They're going to have to, if they want to see it through, watch for, you know, a minute or two. And then you get a chance to actually communicate to something to someone, where you can then, you know, write your website at the end or do whatever. And it's a neat little app. So it's sketchtoy.com. Go check it out. And thank you, Jesse. Much appreciated. Peyton, what's up your sleeve this week?
Oh, just a quick little thing that once you see it, you can't unsee it.
Okay. Do I want to know?
Someone has developed a realistic baby masks for adults.
Okay.
And it looks like basically you have this giant baby head on, and it looks like a perfectly real baby. Okay. There's a link there. It's called the baby head mask.
Am I going to regret this?
Yeah. The video there is they have a guy dressed up as a baby, and the grandmother's taking him out, and the guy's like a bodybuilder or something. But the second link I have there is on dudeiwantthat.com /styles/costumes. Baby head mask, whatever.
Okay.
Anyway, it's you can go in and you can see all kinds. There's another video they have where there's a father, mother, and like a probably 10-year-old walking on the street. They all have these baby masks on, and it's actually terrifying.
This is really bizarre, dude.
Yeah, but it's like, you know, so if you got $350 to burn and you want to have your own terrifying real baby mask, you know.
Oh go ahead and get my that. God, he's even in a diaper, man. That is looks like weird.
It looks like some strange sexual thing almost.
Yeah.
The other video is you're just walking down the street and you're just like, that's odd. Because the woman who's wearing the mask is crying, like really upset, like a baby would be. Anyway, and this is, you know, it's very odd.
Yeah, I wonder. I wonder what kind of a chord that strikes with like new mothers. You know, that's just really funny, weird, yeah. Right?
It's a lactating stuff. Anyway, that's my pick. How about you, Matt? What do you got going on?
Yeah, so in my former life, I was a big fan of Lego. I still am a big fan of Lego. But there's a really great website called The Brothers Brick. It's at brothers-brick.com. And it's just a blog where they sort of compile the latest and greatest of what's happening in the Lego community. And there's some guys who are doing some really fantastic pieces with Lego. And I love Lego because I love you can do basically anything you want, but your palette's kind of limited to the brick, you know? So everything has this sort of stylized, you know, Lego look and feel to it. But there are some guys doing things from, you know, realistic looking tanks and airplanes to
got to the shark, which is like, I want to say life size or a little bit bigger. Like it is huge.
Yeah. Yeah. Robots, mechs, spaceships, just tons of really awesome stuff these guys are doing. And I find that like it's one of my favorite places to go on the web because, you know, every day there's something new and really interesting and creative. And you could kind of get lost in there for hours if you're not careful.
I noticed that there's no robot pirate ships yet.
Yet. Well,
nudge, weekend project for Matt.
I'm trying to get rid of my Lego collection at this point. I'm trying to sell off all the pieces one by one, which is a job in and of itself, but I'm trying to pare it all down. Yeah. There's an interesting site online where you can actually go and you can punch in whatever bricks you want and it comes up with what, you know, the stores that are personal guys and gals that are sort of third-party resellers who are selling these things. And you just pick out your bricks, your color, you know, whatever selection you want, and put it in a little cart and buy it. And I've got a little store, and I've got about 150,000 Legos I have to sort and try to sell off. So
wow. Quick question. Is it as convenient or as expensive to buy Lego online piece by piece or, you know, for specific pieces as it is in the store? Because one thing that I was blown away by recently, I think it was this Christmas, you know, you take a spin into Toys R Us just to kind of see what's new and what's happening on the shelves. And I mean, the Lego sets were nothing was under $100. And I mean, they were cool, but they weren't spectacular. You know, like it was usually licensed stuff like Star Wars or Harry Potter, but like the Harry Potter sets, I mean, they're neat looking, but like $150 for like half of a castle and a couple of guys. Like it seemed really overpriced. Is it always that expensive? Like, I don't remember. Cause I mean, I always got it for Christmas when I was a kid.
It's always been pretty expensive. It always has been a premium toy for sure. Now that a lot of those kids grew up with Lego are now adults, they are buying those expensive sets. So you can, you know, the $200, Star Wars, sets that are out there, those are, constantly selling out. So they're definitely selling them. As far as like buying pieces individually, it's a pretty good deal for the buyer because if you need a specific piece and a specific amount of pieces, you can find them, you know, pretty cheaply online at these places. And for the seller, it's pretty good too because, you know, pieces generally run as low as 2 cents, you know, up to I've sold pieces. A single Lego piece for $30 before. So it depends on the rarity you know, and if somebody's willing to buy it. And, you know, if you have several hundred thousand Lego pieces, you can make some pretty good money.
Wow.
The hard part is just sorting everything and getting the inventory up online and then waiting around for somebody to actually come around and buy it, you know.
I wonder if any of these guys are like concept artists for sci-fi movies, because some of the spaceship designs that I'm flipping through as I'm listening to you this evening, they're just amazing. Like, it just, I don't know how they get stuff to go on angles. Like, I mean, I remember Lego, but I remember it was straight up, down, left, right. Like, I don't know how you do, you know, angled wings or stuff that looks like a biplane from the 40s and all this kind of crazy stuff. Like, it's just amazing.
So
yeah, there's some really creative
using,
dudes.
Are people using 3D printers to manufacture their own custom Lego block pieces?
Yeah, there are a couple of guys out there that are doing it, and they make some really good money doing that as well. I've seen them at conventions, and they've got giant lines, and they're selling these little tiny packages of Legos for, you know, $10, $20. I purchased them myself, so I know they're selling them to at least guys like me. And they're making quite a bit of money doing that kind of thing. I don't know if it's enough to live on necessarily, but it definitely makes a very, very nice side job. That's for sure.
But if I guess if you were, you know, for example, a comic book or a webcomic guy, and you had some popular characters that you wanted to turn into Legos, you could probably contact someone like that, and they could develop one for you. Interesting.
New business venture.
Yes.
Absolutely. Yeah, I miss Lego. I still have some pirate ship Lego kicking around. It's all squirreled away with a bunch of toys that I had set aside one time when my mother did a flea market or a yard sale thing. And I was like, nope, you cannot sell the Transformers. He-Man figures were fair game. I think I get rid of the Ninja Turtles, but the Transformers and Lego were not going anywhere. It's like, those are things that I'll give to my kid eventually. Well, that brings us into the listener email section of the show. We don't often get messages, but you're more than welcome to send an email to thecitadelcafe@gmail.com should you so wish. This week's email comes from Dave L., and he says, "Hi, Citadel Cafe. I recently saw the trailer, which I linked below, for a fantastic-looking graphic novel, and just the animation alone looks wonderful. Joel, being an artist, I happen to have two other artists with me here tonight, Dave, so you're in luck. Would you be interested in sharing your opinion on whether or not you like this kind of thing?" So I immediately kind of prejudged this before I went in. I was like, okay, graphic novel, book trailer. I've seen book trailers before. I understand them. I understand the importance of them. I think they're a great little marketing tool for a book. What I was not prepared for was a full-on classically animated trailer for the graphic novel Kairos. And unfortunately, everything is in French, including the text and possible release dates. So I can't tell you, I can't find any information as to when the actual book is going to be ready. But we've got the link here for anybody that wanted to wants to look it up. Peyton, this was your pick of the week before Dave wrote in and shared it with us. But it was amazing. Like, I mean, obviously there was a team of animators from Studio La Cachette in France, I'm assuming. And man, oh man, like, I want to read the book. I can tell you that right now. And I did find it very interesting, the way that they took the graphic novel style and made it into a trailer. And it's almost like, you know how you have that idea for that animated short? You wish you could make it into a 2-hour epic movie, but you know that's just too much work to ever see the end. And so you make it into this little short, and this is kind of the shorts for me when I was a student, they always seemed to turn into trailers for what would be bigger ideas. Yeah. And I feel like this is a really cool way to get both worlds. Like, you have your graphic novel, which tells your whole story, which is not vapid or shallow and has character development and all these wonderful things. And then you use an animated kind of trailer for that graphic novel, which doesn't have to be Disney animation. Like, it can be sketchy and in the style of whatever your graphic novel is. It can be arty, it can be whatever you dream it to be. And I think it's a very successful tool, and a beautiful piece. I mean, you guys are animators as well. Matt, what are your two cents?
I'm sorry, I was trying to adjust my audio levels here. I noticed that I was probably a little low earlier. Can you hear me okay now?
I can hear you now. You're quite loud now.
Oh, okay. Maybe I'm too loud.
Yeah, sorry about that.
So I'm sorry, I wasn't following along too closely there.
Oh no, I was just saying that the tool of an animated short to sell a graphic novel, I feel, is very, very apt.
Oh, sure. Yeah, absolutely. It's one of those things where people love, you know, the animation concept anyway, and that's a really great way to you know, get a lot of excitement and action and something right in front of people's faces. Again, prepared to actually sit and read, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think the thing that I find so strong about it is that it kind of, it gives you that jumping, that springboard. So like as you're reading this graphic novel, you're going to be able to either go back and view the trailer again or kind of remember what the trailer showed, and then you're going to be able to see that character moving clearly in your mind, you know, when he jumps in with a sword and fights the bad guy or rescues the damsel or whatever is going to happen. I really felt like it did a lot. And I feel like it was also communicating a lot about what happens. Like, I mean, he goes to a world that's full of kind of anthropomorphic dinosaur type characters. And the longer he's there, the more he looks like a dinosaur, or maybe he looks like one the moment he crosses, and all of that kind of stuff is stuff that would be very long winded to read in like a paragraph descriptor of this upcoming graphic novel. And I mean, man, if these guys haven't finished the graphic novel already, like throw that sucker up on Kickstarter or Indiegogo or something with this video attached to it and watch the magic happen.
I think I think it's coming in on April 25th, the book itself. It's great to do because in the past you've seen some videos like this, you know, as trailers for projects or, you know, animation school thesis or whatever. And you're like, I want to watch the rest of the story. And by doing this to a pre-existing story like the graphic novel, you know, you're definitely building an audience. You know, this is being talked about on podcasts, and the video itself is probably going to go viral in the next few days. Who knows?
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, after the book has, you know, reached a certain level of sales, then you're able to, you know, maybe go to a studio and say, let's make this because this little trailer we did, you know, had, you know, 1.5 million hits or whatever, right? So there's an audience there for this sort of thing. So, and, you know, with the online distribution now, like everything can change, right? But I really like the idea of using book trailers, especially when they're done properly, you know, with the right effort involved and that sort of thing. Like there was one for a kid's book a while ago called It's a Book, and very silly little book where there's like an ape and a donkey, and the donkey thinks that the book is like an iPad or something, and he's like, no, it's a book, and everything he says, he's like, no, it's a book, all the way through. Hmm. And someone did a really nice little trailer in the exact style of the book to help explain the book, and, you know, and book ended up being like a New York Times bestseller, right?
Nice. Yeah, so if you can speak to people in the media that they're used to consuming these days, I feel like you're going to have a much higher success rate with something as, I want to say old school as a graphic novel, but, you know, you're dealing with something where, you know, most people are used to being kind of inundated, if not oversaturated with, you know, video movement stuff. I mean, God, even like animated GIFs are everywhere, you know, everything seems to have to move all the time. And I mean, I think there's a lot of us that still have appreciation for the still image, but I think most of us are artists and are already, understanding the value of that. It's the other people, it's the people that are the consumers, the people that read this stuff and enjoy it, but are slowly being kind of taken over by video or Netflix or, you know, YouTube, whatever it is that they're spending their time doing, as opposed to reading you know, still image stories and stuff like that. So
yeah, because a graphic novel, some small startup is not part of the big three or whatever publishing a graphic novel, it's just white noise.
Yeah,
but now if you do something like this and then gets caught up on the social networks and that, and all of a sudden you're like, oh, there's that book I see. Yeah. Or you might get a comic book store, you know, we'll say, I'll order 4 or 5 copies and see what happens, right?
Yeah, I mean, Dave was kind enough to link a Reddit discussion about the trailer and the book as well, which I'll throw in the show notes for this week. And I mean, if you can get yourself some serious buzz on Reddit, then, you know, you know you're gonna get up there. Mm-hmm. And the one more note that Dave actually tucked into the end of the email, which I just noticed now, is that the artist is actually a Goblins or Goblins alumni, which is that great animation school in France. So, and I kind of, now that I know that, the trailer looked very, the timing on it looked very similar to the stuff that you see coming out of Goblins.
Yeah, you get the little setup, and then you're. And they're running, but like you're running your toes, you're running your feet, you're running your toes. The entire trailer, you're running.
Yeah,
that's like the pacing of most of the other shorts that come into the school is like, you know, it's go 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 go, and it's just, you know, jaw dropping. So
everything's moving all the time.
Yeah. Man, this makes me want to get started on my animation right now.
nice. I like the I guess the emergence of this style of. It doesn't have to look like Disney. It doesn't have to be this tightly rendered, no hair out of place stuff. Right. We had, I think it's called The Journey. We featured a short on the show a little while ago, and it was, again, very sketchy. It's very loose. It's very well done, but not at all something I would call a refined rendering. The story was refined. The animation was refined, and the characters were well thought out, but it wasn't, you know, like watching Ariel's hair flow underwater, you know, as beautiful as that is, you know, no one has the budget these days. And actually, it reminds me of a quote that I heard on either Twitter or Facebook. John Sanford, who is a friend of mine online, and he works at DreamWorks as a storyboard artist and director. And he was talking about everybody kind of slamming the fact that, you know, CG animation is taking over. I think it was in the wake of Disney closing the classical department. And he was just saying, animation is not dead. Like, animation is in the palm of your hand. Like, I can animate something on my bloody iPad. Yeah. Everybody on God's green earth now has the power to animate whatever the hell they want. All they need to do is just learn how to animate. And the software and stuff is available at a fraction of what it used to cost. The technology is just everywhere. You know, like, God, I mean, you can even animate, like, not maybe not the pick that I had this week as an animation tool, but there's stuff that's out there, I'm sure, that's similar. You know, web apps can do little tiny shorts to just kind of like cut your teeth on it and see if it's even something that you like. So it's nice to see, you know, this kind of work come out that is not beholden to any kind of, you know, pre-existing canon from the, like, well, just like we talked about, you know, you talked, it was Peyton, you talked about like the big three, you know, in White Noise with an independent publisher. It's the same thing with a lot of animation films, or it was for quite a while, where, you know, if it wasn't Disney or DreamWorks or Sony, not many people would pay attention. But there's lots of other studios now that are coming out with what look like very good, you know, animated films, and not all of them are, you know, polished CG kind of blockbusters. You know, they've got their own voices and their own projects. So I think it's going to be an exciting, I guess, I even want to say like 5 or 10 years of just people doing independent stuff. And as more and more becomes accessible to home, and more and more animators and artists
are studios shut down.
Well, yeah.
Consolidate, and then everybody becomes freelancers to work for the same companies again. You'll see people will get, you know, their big paychecks working on a big project, and then they'll work on a small project of their own with their own IP, and then they'll, you know, see what happens from there, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Yeah, this is the best time in the world to be an animator, for sure, and to be somebody who's interested in animation. The only thing that's standing in your way is just, you know, doing it, just sitting down and taking the time to learn the software and to actually do it. I mean, animation, it takes a long time to do. It takes a long time to tell even the simplest story with animation. But in my opinion, the payoff is very great, you know, for the amount of time you put in, what you get back from it is far greater. So,
yeah, absolutely. I would.
Well, we're all being conditioned to consume. So we're all being conditioned to consume through our iPads and everything else. So the idea of putting that down and turning off the TV and putting in a video game and actually, you know, doing some work. They're not raising us to do that anymore.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
another rant. I'm getting old.
Oh, man. Well, that brings us to the end of another episode of the Citadel Cafe. We record live every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern on joelduggan.com/live. Music for the Citadel Cafe is composed by Kevin MacLeod, and you can find the podcast on iTunes and, of course, our website, thecitadelcafe.com, where you can also find the show notes for all of the cool stuff that we just talked about on the episode. As per Dave L., you can email us at thecitadelcafe@gmail.com. Absolutely keep those emails coming. Love hearing from you guys. It's always cool to have something that, you know, especially if it's something that we've never even heard of. Like, I mean, Peyton had seen this before, but I mean, it was brand new to me, so it's lovely to see new stuff come in. You can also find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Google Plus with just the show name, The Citadel Cafe. Don't forget to check out The Gamers In every Friday night at 8:30 p.m. Eastern on amove.tv. Join Jocelyn and Ryan as they break down their favorite video games as well as industry news. This week, I have no idea what's coming onto the show. Jocelyn hasn't told me yet. I know she's been playing Darksiders 2 a lot, so you're probably going to hear some death and destruction coming your way this Friday. As I mentioned at the top of the show, my name is Joel Duggan. You can find everything I am up to online at joelduggan.com. That is also the home of my web store, where you can find my book, Starcrossed Volume 1, which is available now. Peyton, where can people find you online?
My website is cardboardtreehouse.com. You can find me elsewhere online through social media with Peyton Francis. Just my name, Paton Francis. on Twitter and everything else. How about you, Matt? Where can people find you and your good work?
I am on Twitter at Matthew Forkum, and check out my own podcast, Geeks of Steel. I do it with Adam Huber of Bug Comic every single week. Just go to geeksofsteel.com. You can find us there, listen to some past episodes, and subscribe right on that site there.
Fantastic, Matt. Thanks so much for coming by. Always a pleasure to have you on the show. You're, of course, welcome back anytime that you want, especially knowing now that you're such a big Game of Thrones fan. Like, this is good to know. We've had a couple of guests that have not been able to come on because they haven't been watching the show. So literally half the show, they couldn't even be here.
My wife and I make sure we sit down to watch it every single week. We can't miss that show, that's for sure.
It's definitely our favorite TV date around here for the week is Game of Thrones. Well, ladies and gentlemen, you have been listening to the Citadel Cafe for yet another week. We are fast and easy and cheap, but you can only pick two. Dirty Daryl, thank you for chatting in the chat room. Good to see you, my friend. Matt, I don't know if you know Daryl from the Facebook or the Twitters, but Daryl's another animator friend of Peyton and I.
Cool.
Yeah, he used to work here in Halifax.
Animators all over the place tonight.
Yep, absolutely.
What do you use? What do you use for Twitter?
I'm actually using TweetDeck 0.038, like the old.
Oh, yeah. I like the old one. I don't like the new one very much.
No, me at all. Me either. I'm trying to get the guts to drop the $20 on TweetBot for desktop.
What about Hootsuite? I started using that.
Yeah, I've tried it, and I always just bail. Like, I've tried moving. I say, okay, I'm going to give my entire day to this new insert Twitter app here, and I last 4 hours, maybe, and then I go back to this.
That's a sign of an old man.
Yep. Get off my Twitter lawn.